size of the whale. And I've been lost inside that gale so many times, so many times, many times. And I've been turned into a butterfly, roughly the size of the entire sky. I grew so big, I had nowhere to fly. So many times, so many times, so many times. Oh, so many times, many times, many times. Yeah, so many times, so many times, so many times.
Yes, of course, and thank you, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the show. You are listening to You're Cozy with me, Clifford Myers. And what a great adventure I've been on. I have been through the rolling hills of Kingston over to the plains of Ottawa. I have been seeing the highlands of this country, and it's been a wonderful time. And before I get into our wonderful guest into today's episode, I would be a damn fool if I did not mention our sponsor. Oh my gosh, this is no surprise to you, ladies and gentlemen. It is, of course, the Sodfather. If you live in the Kitchener-Waterloo area and you care about good lawn care, you're obviously going to go to the Sodfather. I've been in Kingston where I've just seen grass wilt away and die. Ottawa, this is our nation's capital. There's hardly any soil left on the ground. You go to Parliament, it's just cement and tears. Justin Trudeau's tears. He's every night calling out his window, Sodfather, come to Ottawa. Sodfather, he's gonna try to make it legal in 2018 for Sodfather to come to Ottawa. That's what's happening, is because people everywhere are feeling what I call the Sodfather effect. It's how you feel emotionally when you know that your sod is not as good as it could be if you were with the Sodfather. And many of you have told me, Cliff, I have sold my house. I am moving halfway across the world to Kitchener-Waterloo so I can get some proper lawn care. I'm sick and tired of this stuff. Will the Sodfather cover my travel expenses? Of course not. You're an idiot. He's not going to cover your travel expenses, but he's going to give you great, great sod lawn care. And what you're going to do is you're going to say, hey, we heard about you on Your Cozy, and Clifford said we can have 20% off. Of course you can. That's correct. And he might even give that to you. That would be really awesome if this deal was real. Because, you know, quick disclaimer, you know, the Sodfather is my cousin Jeff, and I'm not absolutely sure if he still runs this business. But nonetheless, I will advertise until the cows come home because he is the Sodfather. Now, ladies and gentlemen, you know I love to get cozy on these podcasts. And this, our guest today, I've actually been cozy with him for the past week.
Oh.
Hey. Because he was the MC on the shows that I was a part of in Absolute Kingston. And we hit it off very well. I've enjoyed his company. He is an amazing comedian and an even better friend. Ladies and gentlemen, give it up for Aaron Power.
Yeah,
I like that, you know, like the morning radio clapping, like getting into it. They do that on the Dean Blundell show all the time. They're like, oh yeah, if you're just like, yeah, I lost a pound once. They're like, yeah, that's amazing. One time, good for you.
Woo, the Sodfather, yeah.
That's your first time hearing of the Sodfather.
Yes, but I can't believe it's only the first time. I can't believe someone hasn't told me of this great service before.
Well, now I'm going to watch you go through your conversion process. And that's what's always really special for me, is when people haven't heard the gospel of the Sodfather and I see them see the light. It feels really wonderful for me.
It was a very interesting start to a podcast.
Yeah, like it's a... I've kind of stopped, like, the idea of, like, you know, there's a million things out there that teach you how to do a podcast, how to do a YouTube video. I kind of, like, I'm all for do those things, but I don't really want to know how to do them. I'm okay with doing them poorly.
Yeah.
You know, like, I'm totally fine with, like, a makeshift song I wrote in the bathroom, advertising my cousin, and then talking to a friend. Like, that's fine with me.
The best part is, for those listening, when we're sitting here, Clifford just is playing the song on his laptop with his headphones in and just humming and dancing along to it in his chair. while I have to sit quietly so we can get the audio of the room or whatever. And then I don't know when it ends, so then he just goes, "And we're here!" And I'm like, "Oh, we're beginning." Just out of nowhere.
So this experience is already so terrifying for you.
Yes. Yes, it's very shocking.
This has been cool. So you live here in Ottawa, but yeah. We were hanging out in Kingston, and you introduced me to maybe my new favorite format of all time.
Oh, yeah.
The video essay.
Yeah.
Like, we were watching these YouTube channels, Captain Christian, that's where we started with it, and they were, like, video essays on, like, superheroes and all these kind of things, but I'm just so fascinated. Like, YouTube is it's almost an older format now. Yep. But we keep seeing these new kind of formats introduced to the medium. And I'm really fascinated by this. Like, the whole idea of a video essay is extremely compelling to me.
Yeah, they're great. And it's a perfect kind of length as well. They're like 4 to 8 minutes maybe. So it's not like watching a TV show where you have to get so heavily invested. You can just watch one quick and then rewatch it because he talks about so much different crap.
That's the thing. If you compare it to most shows, this guy is filling your head with amazing information in 4 to 8 minutes.
Yeah.
But, like, I just watched, like, 10 episodes of that Chinese version of Big Brother. Terrace House? Actually, I think it might be Japanese. But
Did you say Terrorist House?
What? Terrace House. I've been watching Terrorist House where the romance really blossoms. Some would say it explodes.
Oh, I can't believe we didn't talk about this in Kingston. Sorry if this is getting off topic.
No, that's how this works.
Okay, have you ever watched the show Dating in the Dark?
No.
Okay, there's episodes on YouTube, and so you would love it. It's a reality show, and they have like 3 guys and 3 girls living in a mansion for I don't know how long. And then they never interact with each other except in a completely dark room. So they can't see each other's faces or anything like that.
Just each other's voices.
Yeah, and so they talk for a bit at first, then they'll do a thing where they, like, get together and they kind of touch each other's faces and stuff. And they do all these different things and they slowly get to know each other, right? But, so the idea behind it is, like, you get matched up with someone and then it's actually based on personality and this and that. And
looks,
right? But then at the end of it, they make it about looks, so it's the best.
Well, of course, it comes down. Looks is the climax of that show.
Yes, exactly. That's literally, so they have them in a dark room, and they get, each guy gets matched up with a girl, and they just seem to go with it. None of them go like, I wanted that one.
Yeah.
So they just go with it, and then they, each one that's matched up
stands. Hit the table.
Yeah, sorry, I'm making a visual aid here. They stand on each side of a dark room, and then there's two spotlights, and so then, like, they'll light up the guy, and then the girl sees him for the first time, and you see in the, because they have, like, cameras in the dark there, you see her reaction, like, oh, I'm like, oh, you know? And then that one goes off, and then they light her up, and he sees her.
It's gotta be a tearjerker, though, when, like, the pretty girl sees the ugly guy, and she's just like, love him anyways. You know, moments gotta be, because I can see how that could be compelling drama.
Yeah, but it's more just, I think, callous. Like, it's a really mean show.
Of course it is. Like,
there's one where they have a police sketch artist, and they have to describe what they think that the person that they're matched up with looks like. And, like, one guy's Asian, and the chick's being like, blonde hair, blue eyes. Like, it's amazing.
That is so brutal.
It's so good.
But he just turns out to be an Asian with blonde hair and blue eyes.
That would be even better. Like a Dragon Ball Z character.
Just a white lightning strike on half his head. I'm putting myself in that scenario. If I was dating in the dark, and I feel like I would try to pick up on audio clues of what they look like.
Yeah, I think...
Right? There's got to be something to inflection that will tell me a bit of their culture.
Yeah, and they chat to each other and they talk about... I'm sure you could probably... Man, I don't know if they say it's off limits, but you could probably just ask someone. Like, hey, are you black?
Because
not like that, but, you know.
Because I'm pretty sure, like, the audio listener is just hearing your voice right now. They don't know what you look like, but you obviously sound like a Korean woman.
Yes, of course.
So, I just felt no need to tell the audience that. That's talking to famous Korean woman comedian Aaron Power.
Yes, yeah. Yeah, E-R-I-N, yeah.
But, like, I'm thinking, like, I would be sitting there trying to figure it out. Like the way they talk would probably tell me if they're affluent or not.
Yeah, and they talk about what they do for a living and stuff when they
So it's not even guessing. You just, like, yo, you rich?
No, yeah, it's just literally all for that buildup of the reaction shot of them seeing the other person for the first time.
Do you think they're trying to figure out physical cues in the, like, are they going to be like, well, she sounds fat? Well,
I think they buy into it. I think when they're in the house, they go, this is going to be this is a great idea. I'm going to finally find the person that's right for me without any looks or anything, and just really, you know, focus on someone's personality and what I like about them. You know, and then the light comes on and that all goes away immediately.
Well, have you seen the show Are You the One?
No.
So this is an MTV show where you have like 16 contestants in a house, or 14 or something like that. And it's guys and girls, and they through this immaculate software, matchmaking software, they know everyone in that house has a perfect match according to likes and personalities, stuff like that. But they don't know who it is. And if they figure out who everyone's perfect match is by the end of the season, they win $1 million and divvy it up between all of them.
Sweet.
And but the thing about this show is you get people that, like, they're all they're MTV people.
Yeah.
So they're shallow and good-looking, and they have no depth to them whatsoever.
Yeah.
So all these people, they're just used to hookups. And not really, like, relationships. And in their relationships, they're jealous and toxic.
Yeah.
So they're all bad boyfriends and bad girlfriends.
Yeah.
Looking for their perfect match. Which is, it's laughable because, like, what happens is they meet on day one, couple people hook up, and then they're like, oh, that's the love of my life. And then they go to the truth booth.
The truth booth. They love a rhyming name, eh?
Yeah, really into it. They go to the truth booth, and they find out whether or not they're a perfect match, and if you find out they're not, oh, the drama. They're like, but I want her. She's the one I love. It's like, you've known her for 20 hours, Chet.
Yeah, exactly.
20 hours. And can we differentiate from all the Chets in the room? There's too many Chets.
Dating in the Dark has the greatest ending, too, because they see each other, and that's not quite the end. Always at least one of them, they have to make a decision now at this point. If they want to go with this person and try and, you know, live the rest of their life, or if they want to say, no, screw that, and then go back to whatever it is they're doing. So always one of them will say yes. And then, so they wait on, like, a balcony on the front of the mansion, right?
Oh.
And then
what
happens?
That's so heartbreaking. Oh, God.
And then what happens is, the love of their life, of course, is going to say yes and walk out, and then they make out on the balcony, and it's beautiful.
Oh, this is
a freaking
weird.
But if the love of their life says no, Do you know what happens?
Oh, no.
They get to watch them leave the front door below them with their bags.
That is so weird.
Get into a limo and drive out of their lives.
That is the saddest thing I've ever heard in my life.
It's the meanest show.
It looks like Chet was left.
I can't believe
in the
it
dark.
Only did like one season. Sorry. Yeah.
That is so brutal.
Yeah.
Like that's often when I, like, Slade, the headliner that's been here in Absolute Comedy, he loathes reality TV.
Yeah.
And he really sees it as like the downfall of Western civilization. And I'm just sitting around, like, last night he comes in, he's like, Cliff, I go to him, I'm like, hey, how was the show? Because he had a show I wasn't on. And he was like, oh yeah, it was really fun. And he's like, I feel obligated. How was Survivor?
He's being polite and asking.
Yeah, he's just like being a nice guy and asking how's my show? Like, he's actually doing something kind of important. I'm just sitting here like, I can't believe they voted out JT.
Oh, they voted out JT?
Yeah. Wait,
I'm
you
just
what?
Kidding.
Oh my
shit.
God. I was about to get, like, explain the whole thing. Like, you haven't seen it yet?
I got
you. But, like, I understand, like, the thing about reality television, and it has the power to be a microcosm of real life, where it really shows you true motivations, and it can be a great experiment into human behavior.
Yeah.
But it's also a blatant experiment in human exploitation.
Yeah.
People are just, first of all, self-exploitation.
Yeah.
Maybe if I get my 15 seconds of fame, I can get this kind of money, I'll start my own gym, I'll be the most popular guy at the gym.
Yeah.
You know, there's just, like, all those sort of weird things. Like, when I was at the, I saw, like, I went to a live eviction of Big Brother. even saying those words is weird. I'm gathering with people in anticipation to watch someone get evicted.
Yeah.
You know? Like, it's just like, come on.
Yeah.
And everyone in there is, like, really attention-seeking and kind of, like, not in the good way. Not in a way where they actually can get attention because they have something to say or some kind of impact to make. They just want attention.
Yeah, for the sake of attention.
Yeah, it's like a toddler banging on a pot.
Yeah, or a comedian going on stage.
Yeah, or a stand-up comedian existing.
Yeah. The best example of, like, exploitation and like, experimenting with how people would deal in a situation like that is the Joe Schmo Show. That was the greatest.
Yeah.
That was the greatest of all time.
Now, what was the concept of the Joe Schmo Show? Because I'm a little detached because I watched it so long ago.
So they took a regular Joe Schmo.
Yeah.
Yeah. And they put him in a house and everyone else on this reality show living in the mansion.
Oh, it was like he's an competing actor. Against.
Yeah, an actor. And like Kristen Wiig's in it. Like there's some people now that would be too big to even use. Rickety Cricket from It's Always Sunny plays the Hutch, which is basically the situation before the situation came.
Okay, yeah.
Like, he's the douchebag.
They're
all tropes of different characters.
But that's so funny. Like, they set him up, like, this one guy thinks it's real. Yeah. That's hilarious.
Yeah, and then it's too real for him, and he's, like, getting all upset. I mean, not to ruin it, if you haven't watched it. Seriously,
I feel like I should rewatch Joe Schmo Show.
Yeah.
One of the first reality shows that really hooked me was called Murder in Small Town X.
Okay.
And a lot of people don't know this show. It was only one season. It was a town full of actors, except for 12 contestants, and they had to solve a murder.
Okay.
And they're like, in every, like, at the end of the episode.
I'm picturing, like, Hot Fuzz a little bit.
A town kind of like that. Like, yeah, think very kind of like Newfoundlandish or,
okay.
Even like the way the murder story was going, it had to do with, like, seafaring. Like, the murder weapon was called a boomstick, which is like a harpoon with gunpowder
used
to, like, stick a whale.
Yeah.
Right? Like, it was really fascinating, but the way they would end their episodes was two people go to two different locations where the murder possibly could be or a clue.
Yeah.
One person's going to come and get a clue, and they get to stay in the game.
Oh, and one person gets
the
murdered.
Other person's going to go walk through a gigantic warehouse in the dark, and someone's going to pop out and grab them.
Oh,
I hate being startled.
Yeah.
Like, I would probably, like, elbow that murderer in the face. Like, I'd be like, I told you guys in casting, I'm not good with this.
I'd be so annoyed just to get a lit. Like, it's one thing to get voted off. It's another thing to get abducted off of a show, basically. Like, they throw a bag over your head and you wake up at home.
Yeah. But I guess the question, like, you know, like, now moving past reality TV.
Oh, just really quick. Sorry. Yeah. My other favorite reality TV show is going to be You've Been Yellow Mustarded.
What?
Yeah, look it up.
A real show. What is that?
It's real. It's a small town, kind of like what you're talking about, and everyone in it occasionally gets yellow mustarded.
What? Are you messing with me right now?
Look it up after.
No, great. I feel like you're trolling me, like,
look
throughout
it up
this
on
podcast.
YouTube. It's a thing.
I'll watch it.
Yeah, it's a great show.
That's another fear of mine, being yellow mustarded.
Yes, yeah. By a murderer. That's the murder weapon.
But, like, isn't it bizarre how willing we are to, like, walk towards this culture of self-exploitation? I don't think it just exists in reality TV. I think it's in general now.
Yeah.
Right? Like, we take pictures of our food, of our homes. We let people in to see us. We're constantly invading our own privacy for the sake of attention.
Yeah. Yeah. At least it seems like most people are. Yeah. And, I mean, if you want to get, like, conspiracy theory and stuff, but there's, like, you know, with a GPS on your phone, it's everywhere you go. It's like, hey, sign into this place, do this, do that. It's like, you're telling everybody your daily routine, basically.
But, like,
who cares also? That's part of people. Okay. Sorry to cut
you
off.
No, do.
Some people, like, act like, this and that, whatever. It's like, who gives a shit if the government knows I go to the same Starbucks every Monday? You know what I mean?
Well, I think the problem.
That's the secret that you're keeping.
Yeah, I don't think the problem is that we're being monitored. I think it's obvious we're being monitored.
Yeah.
But, like, I think the problem is more the motivation of that we exploit ourselves. We make it easy for them to monitor us because of some other human motivation. This maybe to be liked, to be appreciated, to be validated, you know, like.
It's natural to want to be included
in a person. And it's so weird that these things that are, like, maybe just an emotional insecurity is guiding, like, nations of people
yeah.
on how they act and react to things.
Well, Reality Star is the president of the United States right now.
And might be the prime minister if Kevin O'Leary gets what he wants,
oh,
right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I forgot about that, too, yeah.
Yeah, like we're now... And the thing is Reality Stars, I feel like, are very in touch with a lot of those abstract concepts in human behavior because they tend to have to work with people that are difficult people to work with, but they need them as an ally.
Yeah.
You know, they're often forced in situations where they have to go against human nature to get what they want.
Yeah.
And I think, like, someone like Trump, like, Richard Hatch was on The Apprentice.
Yeah.
And how he didn't win is beyond me, because Richard Hatch is just pure snake oil, right? Yeah. But, like, you watch Trump, and, like, everything he does is a strategy.
Yeah.
Like, he just lives and talks in strategies.
Yeah. Yeah, it's true. Which is, weird for a president to have, because he's like, I'll lowball someone. It's like, you can't lowball,
yeah,
you know, the prime minister or some other crap like that. You know what I mean? Like, that little stuff that everyone made a big deal of, his handshake, that's like, that's a little psychological little alpha thing, the way he would do that weird handshake. And then Trudeau was like, oh, fuck your mother. Like,
yeah.
Didn't take it, which was great.
Well, it's weird, because even when he was on camera in the debates, he knew where the cameras were and would always walk into Hillary's frame.
Oh, yeah.
He always made sure he was present. Yeah. And my theory about the Donald Trump stuff is that he applied the loudest guy in the room strategy.
Yeah.
Where not only was he so loud that everyone was talking about him, his opponents were always talking about him.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Where, like, if you're talking to Hillary, you're talking to Hillary about Donald.
Yeah.
Right? Like, that's often, like...
that's very interesting.
I equate it to a party where, like, one guy standing up with his pants off screaming. You're talking to this girl beside you. She might have good things to say, but you're really not paying attention or hearing her because there's a guy with his pants off screaming.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right? Like, it's attentional. And I feel like there is an attentional attack on our minds. Like, I feel like for anyone that's going to be in a figurehead position... For them to not think of how to subliminally affect the public mass. Like, of course they have to, because they need patriotism. They need... That's why propaganda exists, is to collect the masses in a hive mind.
Yeah.
So that way, we don't have civil unrest.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. And people think of propaganda as being like 1940s-style posters during the war and stuff like that that you'd have in Germany or even in the U.S., right?
Yeah.
But, yeah, propaganda is not... It's a lot more subtle these days.
You know? Oh, for sure. Yeah. Like propaganda, like even like seeing celebrities rallying together to try to use their influence to push for Hillary.
Yeah.
It was almost cringeworthy.
Yeah.
You know, because you're seeing all these people that are rich that want their friend to win. And it's actually taking away from Hillary's message. If there was some good stuff there, it was taken away from it.
Yeah, I would absolutely agree with that. And there was too many people that Hillary ended up getting a lot of people who really supported Bernie.
Yeah.
And then when Bernie was out of it, the people who supported Bernie wanted those people to be like, you know, fuck Hillary. I was for Bernie. Yeah. But a lot of those people switched over. So it's like, are you just being bought? Or then, you know.
The thing is...
Killer Mike... supported Bernie and then declined to support Hillary once Bernie was out of it, which I love. Stand your ground, and then whatever. Maybe you vote for Hillary because you don't like Trump.
Because she bought that nomination with superdelegates. If it was to numbers, it would have been Bernie.
Yeah.
If it was just on the popular vote. But it wasn't, right? There's more to it in the American electoral system. But, like, I find it really fascinating because I do think that speaks a lot to human behavior, too, that people are willing to endure a certain amount of pain to prove a point.
Yeah.
And so they're like, we'll put up with Trump to put down the corruption that Hillary represents.
Yeah.
And because she represents a bit of the same old.
Yeah.
Right? And everyone, like, now with we can't have an iPhone for more than 5 months without wanting the next iPhone.
Yeah.
Right? So no, the idea of keeping an older model isn't a concept that we adapt to anymore.
Yeah, it's true. We are kind of just cycling everything out. You used to go and get your shoes fixed.
Yeah.
You know? Now you buy a new pair of shoes. You go, screw that.
I bought these shoes for like $200. I wanted to buy a good pair of shoes.
Yeah.
But I've had them for like 3 years now. Because I'm like, I want to pay for a good amount of shoes to like beat out. and they don't look very good. Like, if I'm on stage or whatever, I look like a ratty hobo.
Yeah.
And I'm cool with that. I think my shoes say a lot about me. And I know a lot of people always say, like, and I've heard this, you know, professionally, that, like, people first see your shoes, that you should wear nice shoes. And it tells something about you. And I'm taking that same advice, but I'm wearing crappy shoes because that's what I want said about me.
Okay. Like, so you're a piece of crap.
No, I live a certain lifestyle. Like, yeah. I live in a certain amount of being okay with where I am and what I have, and I'm not trying to subliminally change your mind by my shoes.
I think there is an in-between for that, like what you're talking about.
You're like, Cliff, you should get some.
Yeah, like, shoes. I mean, there's something to be said for being comfortable, like if you had some shoes and you don't have the money to get new ones or whatever, but at a certain point, if you have the means to upgrade and you're choosing to be in these crappier shoes, there is something to be said too just about taking care of yourself
in a way. Well, sure, but like I think for shoes in general, like I find these very comfortable.
Would you get them fixed if the soles were all screwed up?
Yeah, for sure.
How much does that even cost?
I don't know. I would probably
cheaper to get new shoes.
It's cheaper to watch a YouTube video and DIY it.
Oh.
Right?
Would you really do that? I'd get so annoyed at home.
I feel like after this podcast, I would have to. And then I'd take a picture and text it to you and be like, screw you, Aaron. I'm fixing my shoes.
Yeah. They work for a week and then you have to do it again. It's an hour and a half of work, probably.
No one sees me anymore because I'm too busy fixing my shoes.
You're at home heating tar or whatever it is. You got one of those little cobbler hats on.
And maybe I'm being fooled in the sense that, like, everything comes down to making a statement. Like I'm told to do this. So, okay, let me actually put this better way.
What you're kind of saying is by having the older shoes, your statement is that you're not making a statement.
Yeah.
Whoa!
but I feel like I often equated this by, I call it like the new presence in the room. So let's say you and me are in a blank room, right? And suddenly someone puts a bundle of bananas in that room.
Okay? All right, I'm in.
Anything. The bundle of bananas now instantly forces us into a decision no matter what. Whether we acknowledge the bananas or don't acknowledge the bananas are now there.
Okay.
And whatever choice we make is in reflection of the presence of the bananas.
Yes.
You know, like, it's just there now.
Yeah.
And we make a decision whether or not we like it or not. Yeah. So, like, even if you and I are talking and we don't address the bananas,
it can choosing not to address
the
bananas.
And it seems like a statement against the bananas. Like,
that's true.
And so now, like, we always have these things that are brought into our lives as presents, you know? They're like, here's a new presence. And I find, like, there's a lot of things I don't even want to bother making statements on. Like, I actually would rather just, like, not care about...
Oh, that's unprofessional.
Oh, my gosh. My mom. We are not talking to her.
Mom, do you want to be on the podcast?
Sorry, my phone went off there, folks. I'm turning it off, so we never talked about it.
All right, start it over. Play the intro.
I've been turned into a snail. But, like, I guess for me, there's a whole lot of things I would like to not care about.
Yeah.
And I'm told to care about a lot of things.
Yeah, that's true. And is there nothing more annoying than being told to care about something when you don't?
But that's our business to a T, you know? When you want to start working clubs, you're told how long you should go for, what you should be wearing, what kind of content you should be doing.
The last 6 months, I don't do any Trump material or anything like that. And you know how many times people come up to you after a show and be like, oh, I thought you were going to rip on Trump there or whatever. So it's the same thing. It's like by not acknowledging it.
Yeah. But I still find there's so many comedians. Actually, you, me, and Slade are all in that category where we don't want to talk about Trump. Yeah. And like,
because we just did for like 10 minutes, but
well, like, not comedically.
Yeah.
Because the thing is, it's just being saturated to death.
Yeah.
If you have,
yeah, that's true too. Yeah.
You know, at least with this Trump conversation, we're providing a conversational angle that gives people more food for thought.
Yeah.
And then we move on to the next part of this conversation.
Yeah. And that's the thing is too, like you said, it's already being saturated. Like I would want a really creative, unique angle if I was going to talk about it.
Yeah.
Like, there's other things that have come out. Like, remember when the Shake Weight came out?
Yeah.
And South Park did an episode on it. Every open micer had a joke about it. Because it looks like you're jerking off. Get it? It's funny.
And then someone would be like, oh, why are you doing a joke about the shake weight? It's like, because it's such an obvious thing. Everybody else is doing it. Like,
well, and it's like Tinder.
I don't have anything new to say about it. It looks like you're jerking off.
Well, Tinder is the same thing, right? Like, you start hearing someone do a Tinder joke. I find as a comedian, I start discrediting the comedian I'm hearing make the Tinder joke unless it's something significantly different and really stands out.
You know how many comics I've heard do the, I'm trying all the things, plenty of fish, Tinder, Grindr. Get it?
Yeah.
Oh, because it's different at the end.
Well, yeah. I used to do a thing at shows where, like, and I'm guilty of this. I used to say, so for you folks in the room that are being polite and putting your phones down, we'll play a little game. I call it real life Tinder. You're going to come up to me, you're going to look around the room, see there's someone you really dig, and you're going to swipe right on damn titties. My titties, not the person's. I just realized the audio listeners can't see this.
Clifford did swipe his titties sexually as he said that.
Well, hello. And like, you're going to come swipe right, and this has actually worked on one occasion.
You swiped left, by the way, when you said that. Sorry.
I'm doing a podcast in a kitchen. Like, I'm not that well educated. Oh my gosh, that is true. I've been swiping the wrong way this whole time. It's probably why the joke fails every time I do it.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah.
But yeah, that's like, so even I'm guilty of this, right? Because
yeah,
like,
everyone has things they do that, you know, they're not proud of later on, like kind of hack stuff. Sometimes you don't realize it's hack, but.
And I try to stay away, like, because I'm wondering if these are just traps. Sometimes I find they're conversation traps where you end up in like, especially with arguments, you end up in the same cycle of a certain conversation.
Yeah.
Like, for me, I got into a trap yesterday after Survivor. So, basically, a guy got voted out.
And JT.
JT.
Yeah, I heard.
And the person JT was voting for was Michaela, who is a black woman, right? And immediately someone said, I can't help but think JT targeting Michaela had some overtones or undertones of racism and sexism.
Well, what does JT do when he's not on Survivor? Is he a cop?
No, he's a Southern alpha male.
Oh, really?
He's a good old farm boy from the South.
Yeah, people hear a Southern accent and they're like, oh, this guy burns crosses.
But not just that. This is a game where you target people.
Yeah.
So anytime, like, when is it okay to target Michaela? When is it okay? Are you saying like, oh, Cliff, you should be nice and let her go? Michaela's a fierce competitor, not because she's a woman, not because she's black, because she is a competitor. She is amazing at physical challenges. She is really well-spoken.
Oh, whoa, easy.
No, she's really well-spoken. And like she can be socially blunt. Like, she says it as it is. She just, her face shows all her emotions. Yeah. But she's one of the most raw characters we've ever seen on the show. Undisputed, one of the best characters we've seen on the show.
Yeah.
But if I was on that island, I'd be trying to get rid of her first.
Yeah.
She's just a threat to my game.
Yeah. And it's, I think that people throw like racism out there a little too frequently. But then sometimes there are, like, I've heard some things where at first I was like, this is no way this race is this dumb. And then I'm like, later on, I'm like, you never know. Like, I'm a big baseball fan, and the general manager for the Orioles earlier this offseason said that they can't sign Jose Bautista, who re-signed with the Blue Jays, because their fans hate him. Which was hilarious and true, because Bautista's been, you know, they've had a history with the Orioles. So okay, that was, like, fine. And then later on in the offseason, he comes out and does a whole thing about how he likes, how people in Baltimore appreciate more of a working-class guy. And he said some things that were just, like, you could have left it earlier, and then he's like, oh, you know, Mark Trumbo, he's like a working class guy, and you're like, what? This is weird. You should have just said that your fans hated him.
left it at that. And I'm not even denying that there could have been racist or sexist overtones. I'm just saying it's weird that we always jump to it first, and then people like me feel obligated to clarify, and then we end up in this conversational trap that goes nowhere.
And there's the court of public opinion does not believe in innocent until proven guilty.
No.
Not at
all.
They
just accuse you on the spot.
Yeah, and if enough people agree, then that's it. You're racist or you're whatever, you know?
That's terrifying. Like,
it is weird.
How can ignorant people behind their keyboards have this much power?
Eh?
Right?
It's perceived power. We let them have it. Like,
But, like, so I was in this conversation with her, and she kept trying to kind of deviate the point, and she was trying to soften her own original point. And I just kept talking to her original point because I'm not interested in taking all these side paths. I want to go for you vilified him.
Yeah.
So let's discuss the nature of vilifying. Yeah. Right? And that's what I was saying, because she said we should be naming. We shouldn't be afraid to name, and we shouldn't be afraid to discuss these things. And I'm like, I think it's okay to explore and discuss these things. I'm very, very concerned about naming, about the idea of labeling someone.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Because, like, the moment you label someone, the moment I summarize you, I make it near impossible for you to listen to me.
Yeah. There was a guy in, I think it was in Australia, who a woman took a picture of him. He was an older man at the mall. She took a picture of him, put it on her Facebook, and put a whole thing about how he's, like, a pedophile, and he's taking pictures of her kids and everything. And then, of course, it's not true, and it ends up, like, his son had to come out and make a statement because he's getting death threats and stuff like that.
Yeah, I did see that.
Yeah, and his son says, he's like, he just got his first smartphone at the mall, and he was taking, like, a selfie with a Darth Vader cutout to send to his son or something like that. And then, once that comes out, this is where it's like all these people who were so quick to jump on this guy in the first place, instead of taking their torches and pitchforks and going, oh man, we were wrong, we screwed up, and setting them down and going, we should really, you know, think a little more. They take them and turn around and turn on the woman who put the picture on Facebook.
Yeah.
And now she's getting death threats and stuff like that. It's like, I think you just wanted to attack somebody is all you wanted to do.
And, you know, I just watched Beauty and the Beast, and we've learned that these mobs don't work.
They don't work.
Right? Like, yeah. Like you end up in a mob, what's going to happen? You're going to get beat up by a clock. You're going to get your ass kicked by a candelabra.
Yeah. It is fun. By the way, I could take on a candelabra.
Oh, he was good.
Yeah. But also, is there not a better feeling, though, than being part of a mob? It kind of rules.
Kind of. Like, I used to love the idea of an uprising. I used to love the idea of civil unrest. And then I really thought, like, you know, I would only ever be in one riot, and I'd be at the front holding the first Molotov cocktail. I used to always say that.
Oh, yeah.
Because, like, I've always saw myself as some sort of leader. If it was going to be in the church or in comedy or in a cult, which I feel like that might be where I'm going. Sometimes I'm like, yeah, I'm kind of feeling more of a cult leader. Than anything at this point. But like,
you got the beard for it.
Thank you so much. But the whole thing is like, I'm like now with like our literature and stuff, like, you know, we have young adults, children, teenagers reading Hunger Games, all the stuff that desensitizes them to the idea of an uprising. Right?
Yeah.
Like, cause it's, our shelves are filled with
it. And people are obsessed with themselves in a way that they want to be part of history. Everyone thinks that, right now in this moment is the most important time in history ever.
Sure.
Right?
Because we think we're amazing.
Exactly. But yeah. Think of all the length of human history and all the length of human history that's going to come after this. This is not an important moment.
No.
Like, it isn't. And people very much want, though, that to be the thing. I think people, in a way, want to have their own, like, Great War or World War II or something.
They want to
have
their own legacy that they're
part
of.
Yeah, and then they can talk to their kids and tell them how their kids are pussies because they didn't go through what they went through and how now everything's fine because we fixed it all. Like, people always want to be on the edge of something.
But how is that like all of humanity is just us trying to feel better about ourselves and gives ourselves a sense of purpose? Like, that just seems so weak.
Yeah, but also, I mean, that's kind of, I think, human. You want to have purpose.
Like, wouldn't the most important thing in history be the discovery of fire?
No.
Without that, we have nothing.
Those
people die.
Maybe. I don't know. I'm trying to think of what would be the most
important
thing.
Yeah, because without the discovery of fire, we have nothing.
Yeah, or we're all living, we'd all be living somewhere. A nice climate where you don't
like Africa or something like that.
And
yeah.
Vegetarians maybe eating stuff that you don't need to cook.
Yeah, and like I'm sure there's like I know some people say the discovery of fire was maybe like through hitting stones and sticks. It was probably through lightning hitting a branch.
Yeah, I think that too, yeah.
You know, it was probably nature showed them fire.
Yeah.
And then they're like, huh, I wonder if there's other ways to get fire.
Yeah. You imagine before they made fire themselves, if you had like lightning struck something and started a fire, how much you would protect that, like, and keep it going. Oh my goodness. But just getting sticks all day long.
But even wondering why these sky wizards are punishing you.
Like, yeah.
Like, or you gotta, that looks like magic. It would look like magic, right? Yeah. Like, but now we do take everything for granted, so it's
people still think, like, there's things that people still believe in, think that things are magic and stuff. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Have you ever seen the pictures? There's a tribe, I forget where, but there's a tribe that hasn't had any outside contact at all. And so they've taken pictures from, like, an airplane, and they'll, like, if anyone comes to their island, they'll try and kill them and whatever. But people have, I forget what country they're in, but they have this little island or whatever, and they've just decided to leave them alone. Like, it's like, you can't ruin, because we'll ruin their culture if we come in. I don't know how I feel about that, though, either, because I'm like, but what if we help them, too? Like...
Yeah, you almost think just in terms of medicine alone.
Yeah, just like that. But I guess if they're fighting people off when they show up, they're making the choice that they want to be left alone. So we have to respect that choice. But I don't know how much communication there is between...
You know. That's I once heard a pastor at a missions conference talk about missions in the Bible, how there's an evangelical calling for Christians to get the message to, and in the Bible says Judea, Samaria, and all the world. Mm-hmm. And he was talking about a tribe, I don't know, maybe it's the same one, but in his story or his version of it, I feel like this is the equivalent to a hack comedian telling similar material you hear from other pastors, because I must have heard this story from like 10 pastors.
Okay, yeah.
And he's like, you know, they went down to a tribe in Africa that's been untouched by all civilization.
Yeah.
And discovered this tribe, and they were all sitting around, and they had dirt in a bottle. And you know what kind of bottle that was? A Coca-Cola bottle. Oh, wow.
Emergency happened somewhere near here?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure the mic picked that up pretty good, too. But, and then he went on talking about consumerism and how this first world culture will always find its way to invade even the purest of societies. And he was and then he went to go talk about how if we can't escape it, how do we embrace it? And they were talking from a Christian perspective, because there's also that verse that differentiates your religion to the culture you're part of, which is be in the world but not of the world.
Yeah.
Right? Which would be like the Jesus equivalent of, you know, be with the prostitutes but don't do as the prostitutes do.
Yeah.
Right? Like, because, like, the life of Jesus Christ was very much like that.
Well, and you can't shun anybody. Like, that's why you've got to be around. If Jesus...
Tell that to every church.
Yeah, but that's... Yeah, if Jesus didn't go and hang out with those prostitutes, then they wouldn't learn. Then you're just leaving them alone, right?
Well, and like, so that's something you and I, we were talking about when we were in Kingston, is you have a religious background yourself.
Yes, yeah.
And so you were raised in an evangelical church, like Baptist?
Yeah, pretty much, yeah.
I feel like, though, that you... see, you can tell me if I'm wrong.
Sure.
But my perspective... is I don't feel
wrong.
I don't feel like you're as affected by it as I am.
No, but we talked and you had some negative experiences. Yeah. I didn't have any negative experiences.
And that's what I'm wondering, is how skewed is my own perspective because of those negative experiences. You know, like, because there's plenty of people out there that are part of these Christian communities that are doing well. That they're part of a good, thriving community system.
Yeah.
And I can sit around and I have anger and rage for the things that they do and say, even if it's innocent. Because you got to understand, from my perspective, let's say I had a good friend come up to me and he was like talking about submitting to Jesus. So this is part of the Christian vernacular, the Christianese, you know, how they use certain phrases. And he was talking about submitting to Jesus. Now, I think my friend's intentions were well. I think where he was coming from was from a good place.
Mm-hmm.
But I've heard the same thing said by bad people.
Yeah.
People that wished harm upon me using the same words.
So that's that is flawed logic, because this is an extreme example. Every podcast ends up bringing up Hitler eventually. But so let's say that you heard Hitler say that 2 + 2 = 4. and then you heard someone else say 2 plus 2 is 4. It still is 4. It doesn't matter. Just because someone bad said it doesn't take away from the statement itself.
Okay, but they're not saying something that can be mathematically proven.
Yeah, that's true.
So they're saying something that is more abstract. They're not saying something that has a logical absolute.
So that's even, actually, so you even have more room for interpretation. So you can say that someone interpreted it in a bad way, and then there's also good ways to interpret
well,
that.
Well, and I think...
Because the idea of, like, submitting to Jesus is, like, the way that I would think of it is more acknowledging, you know, that you're flawed and human and that you need him to be a better person. It doesn't mean, like...
And I think people do this, even secular communities do this in their own way. If they're not submitting to Jesus, a lot of times people find a way to find some sort of clarity or peace in their life by submitting to something. Maybe it's minimalism. You know, maybe they get rid of their, you know, get rid of their materials.
Yeah. Like, or atheism even is basically a religion on its own.
It's become very evangelical.
Yes.
There's some very loud atheists.
Very evangelical, yeah.
I do find, like, yeah, sometimes we know that good stuff comes with sacrifice in some form, some sort of submission.
Everyone does want to be, and it goes back to, isn't it great to be part of a mob? Everyone does want to be part of a group and feel like that their group is correct. One thing I was thinking of, too, with the mob mentality, with the anger, is something that I had to work on a lot is I'm not that angry of a guy, but when something finally gets me going, I can really go off.
Yeah.
And what my biggest problem I realized was is righteous anger, or when I felt justified about something.
Yeah.
And that's what, like, to the example with the guy in Australia, people go, oh, this guy's a pedophile. Now I can lose my shit because I can really let go because this guy's terrible. And it's, you're really being clouded in your thinking by the way that you're
kind of hitting me right now, because I think about that, and I think I really justify myself with righteous anger.
Yeah. It's very, yeah. Justifying is the perfect way to put it. You feel justified, and it'll cloud your vision, just like, you know, bloodlust will, like rage.
Yeah, and I've honestly felt like I've been in this cloud of rage for 12 years because of this expulsion with my Bible college that was under political circumstances.
Yes.
And because that happened, I just, like, there's a lot of love lost, and there's just a lot of, like, I don't know, like, I find it hard to believe in their concepts or believe in what they're preaching, because I've started clumping them together and thinking, mm-hmm. well, they're all saying 2 plus 2 is 4, you're all Hitler.
Yeah.
I've been doing that.
Yeah.
Right? And I've been justifying that I'm allowed to do that because, well, Hitler was bad.
Yeah.
And I'm justifying myself. But you're saying, hey, righteous anger, that's not necessarily the way either.
No,
it could be just another trap.
Yeah, it definitely is. And, I wish I could remember this. What's it called? The Socratic method? It's like the idea, too. I'm thinking of this now when you go, like, a duck is a bird and a swan is a bird, so therefore all ducks are swans.
Okay. I was
thinking like that sometimes, too, where, like, you were talking about with one person. Because if you think about it, you got kicked out of Bible college.
Yeah.
That was the decision of whatever it is, the dean or whoever, right?
A judicial committee.
Or a judicial committee, right? So that's however many people, 8 people. That doesn't mean that everyone else at the Bible college... There's probably a bunch of people who thought you shouldn't have been expelled.
You know, and I never focus on that. There was a show of support.
Yeah.
But it was... I think I was just so focused on how this made such a drastic change to my path.
Yeah.
Because...
That is true, too. It felt life-altering, which it was.
It absolutely was.
Yeah.
Right? Like, I'm questioning... I'm constantly questioning. I have no assertiveness in my own purpose anymore. Because when I was in Bible college, I was, like, very sure that I should be there and what I was called to do. And I had, like, an assurance.
Yeah.
You've never seen that kind of confidence from me since. And I'm in comedy, and, like, and I've been told I'm a good comedian, and there's people that like my comedy.
Yeah.
And I will take that for what it is, but I still, like, look at comedian, and I have a hard time identifying with that role. Yeah. I have a hard time talking to other comedians sometimes, because they care so much about comedy and value it in a way that I don't know if I do. And I don't want to be rude to those comedians where I come off like I'm slighting their passion.
Yeah, that's kind of interesting, but I don't think I would never take it that way. I don't know. Maybe there are some people who would, but I've also never, like, agreed with comics who take it too seriously in that sense of, like, this is my mission, you know? Like, yeah. This is what I want to do for a living, and I do feel like, in a way, like, that it is kind of a mission, but I'm not, like, hey, I've got to clear everything out of my way for this, and I'm not going to let, you know, people's feelings get in the way of that. Like, yeah. There was an old guy here in town, Jim Robinson, who used to do stand-up, and he was great, and he was funny. He would go up, like, once a month, and he would just get a Wednesday night spot at Yucks and occasionally a Wednesday night spot at Absolute. And so maybe once, twice a month. He'd go up, he'd do 6 minutes, he'd usually do the same stuff, switch it up a little bit once in a while. And some people you'd talk to would be like, oh, can't wait for this old guy to get out of the way. He's just taking spots from the... And yeah. Acts like he's committing a crime by taking spots from the new comics. And it's like, no, that's exactly where... If I don't make a living out of this doing stand-up, when I'm his age, I want to be still doing it like he would, like, once, twice a month. So when I'm his age, I don't want young guys thinking of me that way.
We saw an older gentleman in at the open mic in Absolute Kingston. He went up, and it was his first time doing comedy.
Yeah.
He was looking at his feet. He was all nervous. A lot of his jokes were kind of street jokes. He wasn't reinventing the wheel. You know, he was just doing jokes in front of people. And I liked... that we didn't disrespect him, you know? Even when I was talking to you privately. Because how many comics are those people that would go in and be like, oh, that guy... There was no reason for us to disrespect him. We're like, he brought people out. They got to see us do comedy. And that guy got his confidence boosted. I was talking to people that worked at the call center he worked at afterwards. I said, hey, when you see him tomorrow, tell him how well he did. Be like, that was awesome, dude.
Like, and that's the thing, too, is we're talking about open mic nights.
Yeah.
So that's, like, there is no reason that just because you're trying to do it for a living, someone else can't pick it up as a hobby. And that's how some comics feel. They feel like, oh, it should all be people who are dedicated out those nights. And it's like, no, a guy's allowed to come out and do a set just for fun.
Well, I think what it is...
As long as he's not, you know, and then if it went on and then he was doing street jokes and taking paying spots or weekends, then that... You know, that would be different, but...
Okay, but let's say I wanted to be an RPN, you know, not a registered nurse, but the one that's like a 2-year program.
Yeah.
I go for 2 years, I study, I get the marks, I get hired at like an old folks home or some sort of side hospital sort of thing.
Yeah.
And I get a job. Now, very rarely anyone's going to have that hero savior complex where it's like, this is my mission, this is my job, I'm going to be the ultimate RPN.
Yeah.
It was very much like, I'm going to do this to get a job. But with the comedian's path, because there's not a clear way of how you become a working comedian, there's not a clear path to how you make this happen for yourself.
Yeah.
And you have to figure it out as you go. You got to kind of be resourceful. You need to be able to talk to others. And, like, you got to be an entrepreneur in a sense.
Oh, yeah.
And because that path is less visible and less clear, I think that's why it means so much more, because they think it's more of the narrow path, more of the path less taken, because they would see the path of the RPN as an easy, you did 1, 2, and 3, and you got 4 out of the deal.
Yeah.
Right? Whereas me, I'm like all over the place. Who knows when I'll find 4.
Yeah. You got to do sets, podcasts, appear on other people's podcasts.
Yeah.
Promote yourself, tweet.
Like, even, like, right now...
I don't do any of that stuff.
But we're entertaining people, and I do think this has been a really engaging conversation for our listeners. That's why I really think Your Cozy is a great podcast, because we're doing what everyone's doing, and we're not trying to reinvent the wheel either.
Yep.
But for people like you and me, this is a learning process for us. We're learning how to have a conversation in a way that's entertaining to others.
Yeah.
Like, you've even done stuff... You know, but you've even done stuff where I was saying something, but you physically put your hand out so you can finish your thought.
Yeah.
Like, these are kind of cues that's like, you're practicing how to do radio, how to do podcasting. Like, we're learning a physical skill right now.
I stepped on your, looks like so-and-so is left in the dark line earlier.
And you made
it annoyed me.
But you made a look at me like you knew you stepped on my joke. Yeah. And so that was like, I love that kind of consciousness, and that's what these sort of environments create. You know, so like... If I can see value in it, I will do it. I would love to have more of a singular focus. I would love that stand-up comedy is just my thing.
Yeah.
That'd be awesome.
That'd be the best.
It'd be so cool. Just go do shows, come back and eat sandwiches. Like, that's life. That'd be awesome. But, yeah, it doesn't work out that way. We have to do all this other stuff. And for me, like, I was talking to a friend, and I was saying, like, you know, this tour away from home it's only been 2 weeks, but like it's still 2 weeks away from my wife, 2 weeks away from my son.
Yeah.
And I don't know if the comedian lifestyle is for me. And so I think my path is going to be a little different. But now I'm trying to understand if do I even identify with the role of the comedian? Like, you know, like, because I identify with various roles. We're talking about how I sometimes identify with the role of the marketer.
Yeah.
Or, you know, the role of the...
producing shows.
Yeah, or the role of the mentor, or the role, you know, the coach, you know? I kind of, like, would identify with different things. So I don't know how to make that decision, though. Because this isn't done. You know, like, stand-up's not done. And if I watch this to the end, I know I'm going to be happy seeing my own personal growth if I push through it.
Yeah.
So, like, but it's also something that I'm like, well, when do I call it?
Yeah, and do that I call everyone it, like, everyone gets to that point eventually in stand-up, which is, that's the weird thing. I've been doing it long enough now, like, I've been doing it 6 years, that I have friends who started doing stand-up around when I started, or had been doing it for a little while before, and have since quit.
Yeah.
And they were really funny people. Like, it's like... I don't know if there's it's a tough analogy to make to something else, but maybe if you were like a minor league baseball player and a guy hit 100 home runs in a year, you're like, you know, this guy's an incredible hitter, and then he just can't cut it at the major league level for some reason, or just decides it's too much work and just quits. You're like, wow, you were so good though.
It's true. I think when I first started, there was comics that I was just like, you are freaking solid, and yeah, they moved far away for family, and that's something I'm even considering, because it would be cheaper if I moved further away. But then, like, what I'm making as a lifestyle choice destroys me on a career choice.
Yeah.
You know, like, it's a double-edged sword.
Yeah. And you know, gotta balance that.
The lifestyle I want, like, Chatham, Ontario is so cheap.
Yeah.
Like, it is ridiculously cheap, and it's home of the Hawaiian pizza.
Oh.
So why am I not living in Chatham, Ontario, where I can get a 3-bedroom house for $800, pee in my backyard, and call it a day?
Every comic gets to a point where they go, do I want to keep doing stand-up, or do I want to live in the home of the Hawaiian pizza? It's such a Sophie's choice.
Like, because, like, if we're talking about, like, authenticity on stage... Right? Like, and that was a big conversation we were having last week. We were talking a lot about how do we present authenticity. But now I'm kind of talking about authenticity offstage.
Yeah, and that there is something to be said for that, too. I definitely agree. Because especially with nowadays, more and more, you don't see comics having an act as much as they used to.
Yeah.
And a lot of times, it's like you... people not only want to see you on stage, but they want to follow you on Twitter. They want to see what you're doing, your Instagram and this and that. So if you are doing like a character on stage and then you're completely different off stage, it's weird for people.
Yeah, it's really disassociated. Like I, like myself, like I find like if you go to my Twitter, it's all talking about Survivor and Big Brother.
Yeah.
Like the whole thing. So if you're not into those stuff, you might not like my Twitter feed.
Yeah.
But if you go to my Instagram, it's pictures of me, my wife, and my baby.
Yeah.
And a lot of slices of Hawaiian pizza. like that's about the end of that.
Yeah.
And then Facebook is a mix of promotion and some insightful thoughts here and there, maybe. But yeah. I've become a lot less vulnerable on Facebook because now I'm seeing vulnerability as a problem.
Yeah. And that would go also, I think, the way of with reality stars a little bit, why they're so popular is because people want to see real people now, more so than actors in a show.
And these reality stars on social media, they're on it from the time they get up to the time they go to bed.
Yeah.
They'll be live tweeting the shows. They'll be doing questions. And I see, like, a guy like Evil Dick from Big Brother 10. And someone will be like, hey, do you still talk to your daughter? This is a question he probably gets once a week. And he'll always publicly answer it. Like, this guy's just in a vortex.
Does he?
Yeah. No, he doesn't. He's a... He was brought on the show as this father who has a terrible relationship with his daughter, which is true.
Okay.
And neither of them knew that they were going to be in the same house.
Oh, wow.
And then in the game, they made such an excellent team, they got the final two together.
Wow.
And then he beat her. Right?
That's great. And then they didn't talk.
And then they hated each other.
They went back. It's like they just paused hating each other.
Because they were good. They're good as a productive team working towards a certain goal.
Yeah.
But like as far as just a like a father daughter relationship, because he's a rock music promoter. He's very involved in like the life of like drugs and stuff like that.
Yeah.
He actually came back with her on a season, but left within the first week, and we didn't know why for years, is because he found out in the diary room from the producers that test results came in and he was HIV positive.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And so, like, this guy's lived a certain lifestyle. And I think when he's won that money and stuff like that, like, I can't see him like, oh, I'm going to help my daughter out. Like, you know, like.
You don't think he put it in his savings account?
Yeah. Like, I think he bought a place, bought a dog, and then, because he literally tweets. I think he bought himself a lifestyle where he can tweet until he dies.
Yeah.
Like, I just think that's what he did.
Yeah, and it's interesting, too, because it is a bit of a, I wonder how much these people worry about, it's like a house of cards. Like, you ever see what the situation's up to nowadays?
I really try not to.
I don't, like, nothing. Like, he's...
Doesn't he have his own vodka or something like that?
Yeah, something. But, I mean, I think he owns, like, a tanning salon with his family, and that's... But what else is going on? But that guy was on top of the world for years.
But I'm telling you right now, like, how old is the situation? He's got to be 30, what, 36 or something?
Something like that, yeah.
You know, he's got to be approaching 40, like, being an adult. But
being
adult.
The situation is worth nothing now.
But, like,
maybe, like,
this is how sad I think it is.
Appear at a club, but that on, like, a retro night.
Yeah, but imagine him showing up to a club in Jersey, right?
Yeah.
You know he's hooking up with a 20-year-old that night.
Yeah.
Guaranteed.
But I'm saying, I guess I'm more talking, like, financially. I don't think he's making a ton of money off being this situation. Or at least not enough to support the lifestyle that he had, you know?
I think what a lot of these reality stars do at this point, I bet you he does it too, is anyone that tweets you or whatever, and they're like, oh my gosh, I love you, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
They'll find a way to sell that one person.
Yeah.
So I think there's always $50 in it for him. Somewhere, someone's going to give you $50 or something.
I could see him appearing at conventions 5 years from now, signing autographs, pulling his shirt up.
Yeah.
But
he's got a three-pack. Yeah. The rest are just bubbling out.
It is very, like... His fame was tied very much to that show. In the same way, I don't know if you know, but Vanna from Wheel of Fortune.
Okay.
You know about, she left the show for a few years.
Oh, no, I didn't
know
that.
She was going to become a big actress, and it was going to be a whole big... And I mean, whatever, I haven't
She
really
turns
seen
the letters, that's your job.
Yeah, she's back to that. And it's like, just being Vanna on Wheel of Fortune isn't enough. You need to have something beyond that, you know?
Yeah, which is like I think of Jeff Probst, who around season 13 or 14, he wanted to quit the show. He tried to start the Jeff Probst talk show. He wanted to be the next Oprah, Ellen.
Yeah.
Like,
you know how many spinoffs fail? Like 95, 99%.
And Jeff Probst is very engaging of a speaker.
Yeah.
But he was just bred for Survivor. He knows that game inside and out, and he's an incredible ambassador of that brand.
Yeah.
Sometimes you just find your place, and then your struggle is a struggle of contentment from here on out.
Yeah. Like, I assume it's happy. I don't actually know. Like, look at Alex Trebek. He never tried to leave and do his own game show, or do you know what I mean? Like, he has his niche, and he's happy with it, and he's great at what he does. And there is something to be said about, being content, I guess.
Yeah, maybe that's the goal, right?
Remember when, like, he shaved the mustache? Everyone freaked out.
Yeah. the internet melted
down
that day.
That's the most he's changed it up in 40 years.
But, you know, maybe that's what we're getting to. Maybe that's a crescendo of this whole thing, is if we're more niche-oriented and just understanding, hey, where's going to be my pocket that I'm going to do well in and I can be proud of?
Yeah.
And then go focus on your life. Go focus on everything else.
Everything is becoming more specialized now with the internet.
Yeah.
There's a great TED talk about even just in athletes. When you look at, like, the 1920s, the ideal athlete wasn't a big ripped guy. It was just kind of an average-bodied dude to this all-around kind of thing. And then if you look at, like, the NFL and NBA and Major League Baseball, the way that the players in different sports have, their bodies have developed. Like, a linebacker nowadays is, on average, 150 pounds heavier than one in the 50s. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Everything is becoming more specialized. That's how it is.
Like, imagine, like... You just, like, go to, like, the 1930 Olympics and show them Brock Lesnar.
Yeah. Oh, my goodness.
Right?
People's heads would explode.
That'd be their first time seeing a person without a neck. Like, they'd be like, what's happening right now?
He would be, like, a legend. Like, Andre the Giant was around before the internet, and he was, like, when he would go to a town, I have a certain, my uncle went to a wrestling, whatever he was at, before WWE, this on the East Coast.
Yeah.
And my uncle said that, like, people knew in town that he was coming for this event, and he was talked about as a giant, and people would go, you hear about this giant? Nah, there's no way. You know what I mean? Like, there's no way he's that big. My uncle actually tried to fight him.
Really?
Yeah. So
he was like, what? I gotta hear this.
He was like 20, and him and his buddies got really drunk, and they were sitting around at like the venue before the fight, and doing exactly that, just going, there's no way he's that big, whatever. And then my uncle's like, I could take him. Goes into the back, like to his room in the back, and there was no really security or anything back in the day. So my uncle said he just walked in, right, all strutting, tough and everything, drunk. And Andre the Giant was sitting with his back to him, like looking at the mirror. And he heard the door open, and he turned around and looked at him and went, ugh. And he said he just turned around and stood up, and my uncle almost shit himself immediately. He was like, oh, I made such a mistake. And Andre the Giant could tell, like, because he probably would get
Why is this man coming to my booth?
Yeah, he sat down the...
I don't like this very much.
That's very good.
Thank you. That's my impromptu Andre the Giant impression.
Yeah. Well, you are small and puny.
Yeah. He got up and he turned around and walked over, and my uncle was like frozen in fear, and he grabbed him by both shoulders and picked him up like a child. And my uncle's a big guy. Picked him up like a child and walked out into the hallway and just set him down and patted him on the head. And then went back in his dressing room and shut the door.
Wow. So he was truly a big friendly giant.
Oh yeah.
We don't play like this.
Oh, he would have killed my uncle.
Oh my gosh. But you know what? What a great story for your uncle.
Yeah, I know.
Aaron, thank you so much for being on the podcast. This has been a lot of fun. I need to know, I know you're not too involved online, but is there anywhere you want to direct people where they can get in touch with you and just check out what you're up to?
If they want to, sure. You can tweet me.
Tweet you. Yeah. Okay, what's your Twitter handle?
Cool Aaron Power.
Cool, yeah. And that's Aaron, A-A-R-O-N.
Yeah, P-O-W-E-R, no S. I still have an egg.
Okay.
And I'm going to try and keep the egg as long as I can.
Because you want to be the first verified egg.
Yeah, I already told you about that, yeah. So I love the idea of becoming verified but still having an egg.
Hopefully that your cozy audience can rally together as one angry mob and get you verified as the egg you were meant to be.
Write letters to Twitter or whatever it is you do.
You'll be the Andre the Giant of Twitter eggs.
I'm verified now.
This has been awesome. Thank you so much.
Clifford, where can people find you? Well, I guess they already found you if they're listening.
Well, they know that they can catch me at Your Cozy, but I also have another podcast that I do 4 days a week, Tuesday to Friday, At Home Diaries, where we're discussing strategies from a macro level, politics and pop culture, and how we can apply that on a micro level to our own personal lives. Those are usually... I've actually done... like I used to say they're 10 to 20 minutes long. The last four episodes have been 12 minutes and 55 seconds. I don't know why it's so specific, but it just turned out that way. And of course, you can add me to Facebook, Twitter. It's all Clifford Myers, not cool Clifford Myers. And I'm not an egg. I have evolved. I have hatched. So thank you so much for being on the podcast. And thank you guys for listening. And of course, you'll catch me next Friday with a new guest. And I appreciate all the love. You guys take care. Thank you, Aaron, for being on the show.
No problem. Thanks for having me. All
right. Take care, guys. Bye-bye.